Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Filmcast, where we talk about a variety of random topics that did not make it into the show. I'm David Chen here with Devendra Hardwar and Jeff Cannata. This episode brought to you courtesy of the fine folks at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
Thank you!
Thank you so much for your support, folks. We really appreciate the patrons for keeping this podcast going. Now, today we have a special treat. This episode is one of the few each year that's going to be released on the main podcast feed in addition to the patron feed. And that is because we have a follow-up to last year's Summer Movie Wager. You see, for folks who don't know, the prize of the Summer Movie Wager, other than just being able to lord it over everyone else for a year, is the ability to dictate one piece of media under 3 hours long that everyone else on the show watches, and then we all come together and discuss it. Last year, Peter Serretta won the Summer Movie Wager. And so he chose the movie that we are going to discuss today. But first, let me introduce who's here with us today. He is the creator of SlashFilm.com and the co-creator of Ordinary Adventures on YouTube, Peter Serretta.
It's a magical day. It's a magical time. It's a place where dreams come true, David.
Wow.
Joining us also for this conversation, he is a senior reporter at IO9 Gizmodo, Jermaine Lucier.
I was mad that Peter won before, but now I actively hate him for making us watch this movie.
I think we all do. That's all of us.
It's a magical day, as he said. It's a magical day. Let's just repeat it. It's a magical day.
All right. The movie that we'll be discussing today is Fateful Findings, the Neil Breen movie. I would never, ever...
In quotes, movie. Okay.
I would never, ever encourage anyone to view this movie in any ways that are illegitimate. You should definitely try to find a legal way to obtain this movie to watch it. And I would recommend you Google how to watch it in order to watch Fateful Findings, the movie.
You can rent it for like $15 on almost all platforms.
There you go.
You can rent it. Yeah. You can buy it. You can buy the DVD.
What a steal.
Fatefulfindings.biz. Buy the DVD.
It's on Amazon Prime. It's on YouTube Movies. Yeah, it's everywhere.
Yeah. We won't be having like... There's going to be spoilers right from the beginning of the review. So, you should just be aware. Like, if you're spoiler-averse, you're going to get a lot of details about this movie.
You don't want spoilers for this movie.
Yeah, you want to go in fresh, right, Jeff?
You want to be shocked and amazed by this movie.
You won't believe what we're saying actually happens in the movie, so just do it anyway.
I want to hear David, try to sum up what the non-spoiler description of this movie is.
Yes, I'd like that, too.
I have that.
All right. Before we get to any of that, though, there is one quick bit of film news we wanted to mention. Actually, very appropriate, honestly. We didn't get to it during the main show this week, but Roger Corman passed away this week. Just wanted to give good old Roger Corman a shout out. This is a guy... I honestly think Roger Corman's impact on the film industry extends way beyond his movies, right?
Oh, it is absolutely.
He has influence, but all the people who he has mentored and who have worked with him and who got their start with him, people like James Cameron, people like...
Jack Nicholson, Dennis Hopper, William Shatner, Robert De Niro, Peter Bogdanovich,
Jonathan
Demme, Coppola.
Timur Bekmambetov, James Horner, all these people, Peter Bogdanovich, Ron Howard, people who have worked with Roger Corman, the Corman Film School. And
he might be the single most important person in the history of cinema.
Mm. Yeah,
he might.
That would be a good argument to be made.
He is responsible for bringing the films of Akira Kurosawa, Federico Fellini, Ingmar Bergman, to the United States. Yeah. Like he's mentored everyone we care about in front of the camera and behind the camera. The movies he made are the tiniest fraction of his impact on cinema, but he is a titan.
So go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I was one person he didn't mentor was Neil Breen, and
in fact he shows the exact opposite of cinema, like a greatest contributor to cinema, and perhaps the worst, perhaps like a black hole of cinema, just existing out here. That's where we're going to pivot to.
But huge shout out to Roger Corman. We appreciate everything he's done for our culture. Just wanted to give him a shout out before.
Thank you, Roger.
We get Thank to you. Our review today. Let's get to it. it's time for our conversation about the movie that Peter Cerretta chose as his prize for the 2023 Summer Movie Wager, Neil Breen's Fateful Findings.
I was given paranormal powers as a child. I've hacked into just about all the information I need. They have no idea.
No idea.
No more books!
You were given a power.
Others want to take this from me.
He's writing about government secrets.
I knew I loved you when I was 8 years old. All this time, I haven't been working on my next book. I've hacked into the most secret government and corporate secrets.
The most secret
secret.
Data. I'm seething listening to
government corporations.
I'm going to read the plot summary of this from the internet. A boy develops amazing mystical powers and uses them as an adult to hack government databases.
That's what powers
does
do.
He?
Yeah.
Is that what, that, I don't I think he uses them at all. 7% of the movie.
We should the list rest... the powers, by the way. Yeah.
Peter Cerretta, you know, walk us through how you were exposed to this movie and why you recommended it. For us to spend
exposed is the perfect word, by the way.
Okay.
For us to spend 100 minutes of our precious lives on God's green earth watching Fateful Findings. How did this happen?
Before that, let's just recap here. Last year I won and I brought you guys a good movie and you guys took a dump all over it.
This
and I
was is like, what happens when we don't let go enough.
So I came back again this
as
year.
As a vengeful god. As a vengeful god. Yeah.
My only goal with this today is to find out if at the end of this episode, if David Chen will say at the end of the day, it's impressive that Neil Breen made a movie.
We've already made an exception.
I'm not sure if he will. I'm honestly unsure if he will say it. But okay, so I discovered this about 10 years ago at a film festival called Butnumathon. This is a festival that used to happen in Austin, Texas every year. And it is a 24-hour plus marathon where you sit in the theater in the Alamo Drafthouse. And at the time, Ain't It Cool News's head... Harry Knowles, he would select movies. You wouldn't know what you were going to see. You'd just be there for 24 hours. And some of those movies would be old movies that he loves. Some of them would be Peter Jackson coming out and presenting you to see the first time ever one of the Lord of the Rings films for the first audience. And then some of them would be Neil Breen's Fateful Findings. And my memory might not be 100%, so I'm not sure if this is true, but from what I remember, I think it was Tim League who actually chose this movie, and it wasn't Harry. And it was in the middle of the night when everybody was already starting to fall asleep, put on this movie, and now I know all of you guys watched this probably in your home by yourself.
Yeah, we should have done like a group like commentary. That would be the way to experience this.
It's the only way.
This movie was an absolute blast to see with that audience in that moment. Like it was, I was stuck on the edge of like, this is so bad. But wait, is the filmmaker who is also the star, who is also the editor, who is also the special effects person, who's also he's a genius.
Financier, he's everything. Yeah.
Is he in on it, or
that's the question?
Where I was gonna curious what you guys thought. Yeah.
No.
I sure we could Google this and find out. I specifically didn't.
I have the answer to this. So you guys go at it.
Okay, I'll go with my first. It's like. I was like, no, it's sincere. He's Tommy Wiseau too. And then you get to a point where it's so bad and so like, it just skips such obvious things that even if you're a bad filmmaker, you would do that. I was like, no, he has to be in on it. He has to be doing this because he wants to have that room communal thing. So I thought, I think he has to be in on it.
It depends on what you mean by in on it. Because if
making
you think,
a bad movie for the sake of making a bad movie.
I think being in on it means is if he is somebody with too much money and a lot of time, and judging from stuff I've read about him, he said he's always had a love of cinema since he was a child, just like the child in this movie. He's always had a special power. but he's never been through film school. And he is very sincere about these. Like, the synopses of the other movies are essentially, it's always him as a messiah, essentially saving the world from all of its problems. So he has reached a point in his life where he can make movies where he can be the hero, basically. I think that's what he's getting at, not at, you know, kicking ass at Putnamathon.
I gotta say, guys, I think this movie's a masterpiece.
Oh, sure. Yes.
I had so much fun watching this movie. I was laughing my ass off, and I'm here to thank Peter Serretta for making me aware of this.
Wow.
This movie makes the room look like Apocalypse Now.
It's, this is true.
It is so... I stayed up really late last night reading some incredible essays about this movie. It is extraordinary. Extraordinary. Now, also sad and disturbing in a lot of ways for many of the reasons that Devinder touched on, but like... The you know, I can't help but relate to the poor actors, many of whom female, who are clearly, he just is there to try to kiss them, and is
but only like awkwardly smooch them with his shirt half off.
It is so
only shirt down to the shoulders and then drop it at the feet. Yeah,
it is so obvious that none of those women. They just are so desperate to be in a movie. And you
that's
know,
everybody in this movie. I believe so desperate.
Yeah. I have been around that. I have been that. I have, you know, signed up for projects that halfway through I went, oh boy.
Oh that's boy.
This podcast. I shouldn't have been. Things like that.
I've been on a podcast for 10 years and been like,
he's just so desperate. And he's only paying an exposure too.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying to get some smooches in and when I can.
Exposure in every form. Yeah.
That said, dude, I sitting alone in front of my computer screen, I watched this on my computer, not even on a television. I was laughing. I was cackling at this movie. And if you are someone that can get joy out of bad movies, if you like Troll 2, if you like, you know, The Room, there's a half a dozen of those sort of epic, incredibly crazy, can't believe this got made films. This has to be on your list. I was texting my friends that I know love bad movies and like, you gotta check this movie out. Cause it is an amazing thing. And I kind of don't even care if he knows or doesn't. It feels sincere.
It's a pure artistic expression.
It does feel sincere. There's no doubt about that. Yeah.
It's purely sincere. And I also want to say, Peter Serretta, thank you so much, because now we have all the truths. The real truths. Now we can act on our own outside of the corporate systems and these incompetent politicians.
And we're going to watch them all shoot themselves in the head.
Most secret secrets.
The most secrets.
I had a great time.
I had a great time in the second half after I watched the first 30 minutes and had to take a break because it was just too much. And then,
By the way, we got this email.
Yes.
Jermaine was, I think, 15 or 20 minutes in, and he was like, I don't think I can make it, guys.
It's true. I knew I'd heard of it probably from Peter's experience reading about it, and I knew it was in this category, and I was prepared, but I wasn't prepared for just like the level of incompetence. But by the end, like I said, there were things like, except we're talking full spoilers, when the brother-in-law or whoever, and then the wife kill themselves, and then it never gets addressed. I'm like, why wouldn't you address this? Like
the next day, he moves
the daughter comes over and is like, you killed my mom, killed my dad, and I'm like, yeah, and his wife fucking died. Like, why don't you say? Like, it was just things like that just got me so mad that yes, by the end, I was laughing at how bad it was, and never a bigger laugh than at the end when you get the green screen of him with like the. Like the building in the back, and then the suicides. I was like, "This is this
movie having the record for the most suicides in one
most suicides, most suicides. Book throws." I couldn't, like I said, I took 1,200 words of notes.
I mostly took notes too, and you guys know I never take notes.
Jeff and Pat refuse so many notes. Every week. I beg Jeff to take notes, and he never does.
I just didn't want to forget. I took a note every time I laughed, and there's a lot of notes.
I want to hear the notes. I want to hear the notes. I'll just say I also kind of had a good time watching this movie. Here's what really irritates me. People comparing this movie to The Room, right? As was it you that Jeff said that this makes the room look like
everybody
like,
does it.
The room looks like the room is like a masterpiece compared to this. And just in terms of the basic, are you shaking your head because you're?
It depends on what you mean by masterpiece.
I laughed more at this than the room.
Yes,
I think that the room
is more competent.
Is a more competently made film by far.
Like, yes, like, sure.
There are some weird things about it. Like all of Tommy Wiseau's
That's
lines
what you
are.
You go to the room for is for competence?
I'm just saying, I'm not. Did I say I go to the room for competence, Jeff? I'm just saying I don't like it when people compare these two movies because The Room, despite all its flaws, is a movie. Like it's made. It's a.
Faithful Findings is four movies. You get four movies.
They are made for the price to be compared. Of one. They're made to be compared to each other. Like The Room may be more technically competent.
Yes, it is more technically competent.
Technically competent, sure. Yeah, but what if somebody who had never seen a movie before decided to make a movie in the world, like disregarding every single rule of film school, of film narrative, of editing, of continuity,
of having
everything.
Cast members on set so you don't have to shoot Throw just it all their out fucking the window. Feet?
I love... This movie feels to me like what if an alien came to Earth and tried to make a movie?
Yes.
Neil Breen is absolutely an alien.
Or, you know, honestly, what I was thinking of because it's, you know, 2024 right now is this is an AI making a movie. This is a pure AI.
Yes.
Like, it is so disconnected from anything that resembles actual human behavior that it's like this magical mushroom that you find in the forest. It is such a beautiful thing.
It is
thing.
A mushroom you find
you know,
in the forest.
You know what also reminded me of a lot was Paul T. Goldman.
Me too.
It's mostly
with the I want to smooch ladies and I'm awkward about it. And so maybe I'll just use the movie as a pretense.
Fucking secret agent too. Like it's just there is a category of
delusion.
Dudes, mostly white, that have these like extremely specific delusions of masculinity.
Oh yeah.
That in the case of Paul T. Goldman, they got to produce into like a very sophisticated thing. And this is just like the shitty version of that, basically.
I mean, you could argue
this dude shows up on January 6th.
Yes, exactly. I say you could argue we elected one of those dudes to be president.
Absolutely.
Like it's the same mindset.
Yeah. 100% it is.
Yeah.
100%.
All right, let's hear some of these notes. So I'll say one last thing and then I'll hear some of the notes. But like as Devendra indicated, many of the basic notions of filmmaking are disregarded in this movie. I think I felt it most acutely in the sound mix. Like it felt like a lot of people.
It's just the onboard mic.
It's one of my
notes. It's just like the onboard mic on the camera. There's no boom mic. There's
That's
no.
That's where you felt it most acutely.
Yeah, it was because
not the editing.
Well, the
because
the
you're
editing,
cutting back and forth between people in a conversation, and like the room tone is wildly different between you're hearing things that you don't normally hear in a movie, and like. That's when it first hit me, Jeff.
My favorite piece of sound editing, by the way, is when we go to the pool party and there's four people there. And for some reason,
you put stock
background audio of a bustling party at it. It's the best because you see four people standing around the saddest backyard swimming pool, and there's just like the sound of a freaking Justin Timberlake concert. You know, it's just like...
Well, I'm just glad he invited his nurse / neurologist who he never met to the party. Because I was wondering when that girl's going
to thank her.
Yeah. Thank her for doing literally nothing because he just got up out of fucking bed and left the hospital.
She who also looks younger than him by like decades, but older in the past. He was she was 11.
She aged like...
And she comes in and takes his pulse. And that's what she does. She comes in and takes
his
pulse.
With her arm. Like on the arm, not the neck.
Yep.
Amazing.
It's the most doctor thing they could think of for her to do is to take his pulse.
But I love that she aged like 15 years and he aged like 45 years.
Yeah.
I blame the cube. I think it was the cube. I think the cube aged him. The cube aged his headcanon.
Agreed.
I'm going to.
All right. Go ahead.
Like I said, I have 1,200 words, but I. So I'm not going
to
do that.
This has to be content for your blog. By
no,
the way.
I know
like,
it's
if
crazy.
This doesn't go online, what are we?
Oh
even
my
doing?
God! Right. I have all right, so I bolded a few that are just. I'm going to read them right how I wrote them. You honestly never know what the next shot is going to be. Feet, demons, another house, the same house. Then I wrote, he told her already about the hacking. There's a full scene, and now he's acting like it didn't happen. I love how every shot sounds different. Some have ambient sounds, others don't have sound at all. Clearly, yeah. There's no actors here. Why are we seeing their feet? So many have shirts. Smash cut to the daughter. WTF. Her and the police are there now. No mention of the wife. Didn't grieve her.
I didn't know, Jermaine, you put these all in haiku form, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Like. I tried to. Yeah,
this is all he could manage as he was watching this
yeah,
thing.
I'm typing them quick. Yeah. And then there's just, it goes, why does he have four laptops? Stop throwing books. Oh, good. It's actually his book. Like, it goes on and on and on.
Hey,
it was amazing.
Stream of consciousness.
Beautiful. There's something beautiful about that. Yeah. Go ahead, Peter. What did you say?
He is a brilliant writer. When he's in his hospital bed and his friend is there comforting his wife, mm-hmm. and his friend says, "He's my good friend." And he's my good friend. Just like most obvious of the, like, telling you what the character, who the character is. It's just brilliant.
Well, and it's so respectful. Because if you ever miss a line of dialogue, it's immediately repeated for you.
Oh, absolutely. Like, so five times.
You're guaranteed not to miss the important stuff because he says it again.
And also, you're guaranteed not to miss the important stuff because he says it again. Because
he says it again.
He says it again.
He says it, he does again. Say it again.
Truly built for the streaming era of, like, you know, we're watching something halfway. By the way, I think the MVP aspect of this movie is just the way he types. Just the Kermit the Frog doing the wild typing
with the five laptops all off.
Yes,
The first time we find out he's a writer, he goes, "I need to work on my book." Smash cut to him reading a book. That's how he's working on the book. Is he has a book open and he's looking at it?
But it's his own book. We find out that's his own book, The Red and Black Book. It's his own book, right.
He's signing copies for...
That's another scene.
He's signing copies. That's the first time we see him doing anything. I love the fact that he bought a bunch of books and then took the dust jackets off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
Yeah.
He gets a lot of use out of them. More use than he gets out of the Ferrari where they just wash the same mirror over and over again.
Rosa.
Yeah, but you know whose Ferrari that is?
Who?
Neil Breen's.
Did you guys? I'm not surprised. Did you guys watch the credits?
Yes.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta watch the credits. Okay. The credits are awesome. There's a bunch of companies that all have an N in the name, the capital N, like Food and Stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, catering by Food and Stuff. Production design by Producers and what? And then at the end, like if you didn't get it, it literally has a disclaimer. Any of the previous companies that have an N in their title is Neil Breen.
I saw that.
He just wants you to know he did it all, but he took the time to think of fake company names. You know, for the tax shelter, probably.
For the tax shelter. Yeah, definitely.
I'm just curious what the catering was like if Neil Breen did it. You know, what do you think?
How good were these sandwiches?
What do you think he brought to set every day?
Are there interviews with the actors that have been in this?
I have not looked that up.
Hit us with your info, Pete, please. Mm-hmm.
So the next year this movie came out and it was playing at CineFamily in Los Angeles. And I took a bunch of friends to CineFamily to see it. Neil Breen was going to be in attendance at CineFamily to watch this.
Oh, wow.
The whole audience was having a blast, laughing at everything. Neil Breen comes up at the end of the movie and it is immediately clear he's not happy that people are laughing.
Yeah.
This is a work of art that he's like, I don't know. It was immediately clear that it was completely sincere.
Is there a video of this anywhere, Peter? Cause
I don't know.
There are interviews of him with I've seen him with YouTube podcasters. Those are online, but there's very little else with him.
And the other thing I had heard, I'm not sure, this is hearsay. This is, you know, don't take it. I had heard that Tim Wiig, who is part of, what's his company? Neon Films.
He's no longer connected with it. He helped to co-found it. Yeah.
Yeah. I had heard that he wanted to distribute the film and do midnight screenings and stuff, but Neil Breen did not want his film being taken as a midnight joke movie. So he refused it.
I mean, listen, this movie is a testament to true independent cinema. True independence rules, from logic, from writing, from outside financing. This is independent cinema.
Yeah. Evidently, he's a Las Vegas architect.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's he's how made he a lot has of money all that, his money. Yeah.
Here, let me, Jeff, I want to hear your notes. But,
I just want to say one quick thing. It's shocking to me that this was made in 2012. because like even all the technology on display feels like 1998.
Yes, mm-hmm.
It's like, true. There's no 2012 cell phone in the movie.
Well, you could tell. You could tell the timing, Jeff, because in the opening sequence of the them as a kid, it's the same cars. It's cars from the same era that exists now. They didn't go back and find 20-year-old cars.
Sure. Why would you?
Yes. So it's all. Yeah, it's all 2020.
It looks shot on the same cameras that they shot 28 days later on, which was 2002. One amusing thing you can do is read some Google reviews of Fateful Findings on the internet. This one comes in from Charles. This movie cured my multiple brain tumors. The acting was spot on and felt as real as my $20 body pillow of the god that is Neil Breen. The plot holes are non-existent like my 15 marriages.
I think he's being, I think it's a joke.
People are too clever by far.
All right, Jeff, let's hear some of these notes.
All right. Literally, this is just all the moments I laughed.
Written down.
Okay.
Yeah.
The first one, I already talked about the neuroscience comes in and takes a pulse. And she says, he's not my patient, but I've become curious about his, you know, I'm going to come check on him.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Air mask over bandages. How does that work?
It's a lot of bandages too.
Yeah. Pulling out the IV that is clearly just a tube with a piece of scotch tape over it, but there's pulling them out.
They didn't even like make a mark on a skin or anything. It was.
It's the greatest. Like we are in a tight close up of that, so you see him pull it out. Oh, the butt crack hospital gown shot.
Yes.
Gratuitous. Yes.
That's hilarious. Neil Breen ass right away.
Hilarious. Right away. Like, I had no idea how much nudity of Neil Breen we were about to get, but the fact that he, like, lingers on his own butt crack, incredible. I already talked about, I'm working on my book right now, cut to him holding a book. Chef's kiss. Pills. Where are my pills? Puts the pills into the toilet, then throws the empty pill bottle onto what is clearly just the floor. There's no garbage can there. It lands on a naked floor.
Well, at least somebody goes in and scoops out the pills and then dies on them. So thank you.
And also, like, introduces a whole new subplot about that character, which we were not even aware of. Just, she's addicted to pills. That's why. She's not doing this to, like, save him, but she's addicted to pills. Amazing.
Someone at some point suggests that he, or they're at the dinner party, and he suggests that he has, while his face was absolutely covered in bandages, and you know, she got into the shower with him, and just an enormous amount of blood gushing as she's hugging him.
Wonderful corn syrup.
Yep. Just an enormous amount of blood, like
so much blood,
disturbing, like presumably coming from his face. But we get to the dinner party, and someone says, "Boy, you sure did heal fast." And his response is, "I've got great family genes, but I'm still in pain." Still in pain.
I think the biggest laugh, Jeff, while you're listing all these, I have a damn master's degree in computer science. And I turned out to be a writer.
In computer science. And I ended up a writer.
Yeah.
That's to set up the fact that he's an excellent hacker, Da Vinci. That's such a good hacker.
He's a very good hacker. All right.
The desk sex scene where he's just throwing papers into the air to show how much joy he has at kissing her.
He puts it all back, eventually.
Jeff, it's called the throes of passion. I don't know if you've ever experienced this.
Yeah.
But when you experience the throes of passion next to a desk, you just start flamboyantly throwing things off of it. That's how it
I've
works.
Never ripped, loved ripped, someone that much.
They ripped the shirts. Like, and they obviously could have done another. Couldn't do another take because they didn't have as many shirts.
They have one shirt.
They're kind of laughing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it just rips the shirts to like not even enough, and then they're off in the next shot when you see their feet. A lot of feet shots.
A lot of inserts. We need more inserts.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the naked.
That's like a signature. That's like a Neil Breen signature. Is like feet shots.
Inserts. Forgive me, but who I referred to as the boob wife, the wife with the boobs, sitting on the. I don't know if she had a name. Did she have a name? She probably had a name. She sits on the bed during one scene and is supposed to take pills, and we see her palm the pills and then hide her hand in her crotch for the rest of the scene holding the pills.
Mm-hmm. Well,
instead of just having something that she could actually put in her mouth, like, I don't know, Tic Tacs or whatever, or just M&Ms. Fake it. No, we had actual pills, but she's so concerned because evidently they used real drugs of some kind. It doesn't want to take them, so pretends to put them in her mouth, palms them, puts it in her crotch, holds a clasped hand in her lap for the rest of the scene.
That whole relationship, I mean, nothing in the movie makes sense, but that relationship was just completely superfluous. Like, you could cut the entire thing out, except that it's the only friend they have. The dude is always drinking. He's always watching his car. He doesn't deserve to get murdered for it, but, I mean, maybe he does because he's in this
movie.
That
poor girl.
And then, the daughter. I mean, there's just, that's a whole other podcast.
There's four different movies. It's four different movies. There's four movies all running in parallel, and they never intersect. No one thing from one movie matters in the other movie. His superpowers have nothing to do with his hacking.
Can we
list? To do with the relationship drama and have nothing to do with the other people's lives. Nothing intersects.
Can we list superpowers, by the way? I need to know the superpowers. There is teleportation.
That one for sure.
Yeah.
Does it help with the hacking? Super healing, yes. Does it help with the hacking? Does it help him?
There's no evidence of that.
I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say yes. Like, with my typing, how else would he get anywhere?
I think he's just smart.
Oh, yeah. Super, super genius. Messiah-like figure. Also, he knows all the truths of the world, right? He's out to save humanity.
Well, that's because of the hacking, though.
But also, I think he was fated to it. It's right there in the title, Jermaine.
Was he fated to it because they found a mushroom? Is that it? Okay. So it was completely just about they found this mushroom, and then because he took the opening thing, that kind of set the whole thing. I guess there was the ghost. There's the ghost wave that goes.
What about
around.
I don't.
You're looking
in
for
the
logic
wind.
When they're.
No, I know there's no logic. I'm convinced, and I almost thought I almost proposed this as an experiment. I think you could take any 2 minutes of this movie, any length of this movie, any second, and analyze it down to like every for like an hour and a half about everything.
Somebody
that's
needs to do
wild and wrong with it.
1 minute, you know how they do 1 minute Star Wars, 1 minute Goodfellas. Somebody needs to do that for this movie.
Every
would
single
to that
one is so fascinating just because it's everything. Everything is wrong in every single scene, and it's absolutely maddening.
I want to do some more funny moments because I enjoyed this. So
please,
much.
Please.
Okay. At the pool party, she's carrying the giant notebook that has one thing written in it for good luck.
For good luck.
In her front pocket next to her phone. She's been carrying that since she was 9 in her front pocket, and she never added anything to it. It only has one thing written in it. Amazing.
It's a magical day.
It's a magical day. That's all she needs, but I'm going to carry that around next to my cell phone.
Yes. Again, she shouldn't even be there, and he misses the moment where he shakes her hand, the hand with the bracelet, and the moment he notices. That happens so deep in the frame that it doesn't happen. It's not until she drops the notebook that he sees the bracelet. So he missed the moment.
But he's not stupid enough. Neil is not stupid enough to think we might be wondering why a neurosciences wouldn't have picked up on it. So he does add the line where she says, never thought to look at the name on the chart.
Yep.
She points that out.
Yes.
That is the one.
And I think that's
places,
attention to detail.
I appreciated that they clarified. I really appreciate they clarified.
That is because she really cared about this patient so much so that she wanted to keep tabs on him and take his pulse. Never thought to look at the name on the chart.
Yeah, because if she did, that would have broke the whole thing wide open. Like, it would have altered the whole course of the movie.
Exactly.
Streamlined the narrative. Yeah.
Thank goodness Neil Breen has been, thought about all of it.
Who the thinker?
The script was supervised by Script and Us or whatever.
It's all just Neil Breen. Jeff, you're saying, this is clearly an AI movie, by the way. Listen, I have seen a lot of video footage made by AI. Just yesterday, Google showed off their thing. Donald Glover and his people are playing with it. AI can make good stuff now.
Yeah.
It looks like it's shot well. It's framed correctly. It can edit even between sequences. This is beyond AI. This is truly alien filmmaking.
Yeah. I agree. I think it is an alien who came to Earth and trying to convince us that it's not an alien. It's like, I am human. Look, made movie. He goes at the same pool party. He goes over to his, I guess what? We don't even know if she's his wife. She's just the woman he's currently with.
We assume.
Right?
Yeah.
He says to her, I've known her since she was 8 years old. No reaction whatsoever. There's zero reaction. She just stares off into space. There's no, and the camera lingers, as it does quite often.
The camera does linger once in a while, yes.
Then Neil Breen goes over to the blonde woman, and he says only two words. Very nice. Does anyone have any idea what that meant?
Neil Breen just watched Borat.
Emily is the name of his woman he's with in the movie, and then Leah is his childhood friend, who is also the blonde woman.
Thank you. But we still don't know the name of Boobs McGillicuddy.
And by the way, he casts most of his films off of Craigslist. He just puts Craigslist.
I'm
out.
Not surprised. I think there was one. Amy is the character.
There is one good actor in this movie, and that is the guy who plays his therapist. Who is like an older dude.
No, he's not.
And he's just
not a good actor.
By the way,
room of all time?
Largest room of all time.
Compared to the other therapist that has two folding chairs.
Two folding chairs in the corner.
But they're both in a huge mansion, and they have no budget for the sign. The budget for the sign is print out and post it out.
Same sign.
Same sign. Every door has the same sign.
They filmed the other therapist in like a tiny corner.
It's like a closet.
A room. And then the other therapist in a conference room with a conference table and multiple empty chairs.
And they're sitting at opposite ends of the very long conference. Yes. Amazing.
I think that woman is the only good actor in the movie. She's also
pretty good.
Who I guess also has superpowers.
Yeah, she disappears. She also teleports.
Yeah.
She made sure to put the post-it up first before she disappeared. She put the post-it up letting know she's leaving this world.
When Emily dies, he takes out a personal recorder and records a note to himself, and all it says is, Emily's dead! Just so he doesn't forget, I think, probably.
Was that his phone?
Yeah, it was his phone. I don't remember that. I think he called somebody.
It looked like a Sidekick type of device that you would type in, but also he was using it as a phone type thing. But either way,
it seemed to me like he was taking a memo, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, memo to this was the alert to all the friends. She's dead. We're never going to mourn her loss. We're never going to have a funeral. We're never going to talk about her ever again.
No, she died girlfriends.
Died to conveniently get out of the way of his actual relationship. But he has no guilt or responsibility because he was always trying to do the right thing by her. He turned down the advances of the younger girl who just wanted to come over and take her top off.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good man, Devendra.
He's a good man.
Yeah. Okay.
Some would say the greatest man.
Almost.
Never be done, Jeff, please.
Plate of spinach? Anybody?
Delish.
Plate of naked ass spinach?
There was nothing on it.
It's a plate of naked spinach.
Hey, at least... He had good balance with it. It didn't just fall onto his desk for no reason.
Good balance.
But then we get the insert shot, so you really see how fucking naked the spinach is.
It's actually all that was for catering that day.
That's right.
Yeah.
Laughing my ass off at this stuff. I mean, we already talked about most secret government secrets, most secret. He's... When the man comes to... abduct Leah.
I'm glad he had the note, if you're going to say, but keep
and oh, he drops so the note. He drops the note on the ground.
He drops the perfect note that explains exactly where it is. Love that. But also, he decides to call her as he's walking up to the house.
Yes, he does. That's true.
Honey, I'm walking in right now. I just want you to know. Honey, are you home? You're not there? Pick up the phone. I'm walking in right now. The scene happens 2 feet from the front door. It's incredible.
This is why Neil Breen is a genius. He is a genius.
You left your purse on the side, and then he does it, but he doesn't mention the note. And then he's
narrating the whole scene into the phone and thinks she could be literally 2 feet away. But he's narrating it into the phone.
Yes. Which,
and he knows he's leaving a message for her. It's incredible. He's saying it like it's 1998 and there are answering machines that we all hear in our house. But it's 2012.
Yep. I don't think he knows that. I actually don't think he knows what time he's in or anything. We really should have done this as a group. I feel like that would have really helped. But listen, we can't just talk about the secrets. We have to talk about the most secrets. The cheating, the lying, the corruption, and hypocrisy on a massive scale.
Massive. Worldwide.
I resign today as president of the bank.
Which bank?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Never seen you before.
I represent just the concept of investment bankers. I'm not a specific person.
The only form of justice, by the way, is death.
Yeah. They called their press conference to announce their resignations. And then later on, committed suicide.
Then later on, yes.
All in different ways. And there was not a single person operating those cameras. There's a lot of cameras. Not a single person operating them at all.
The same 10-second crowd applause sound every time they say this. By the way, they all kill themselves in very different places at different times. Like one guy raises a gun and just shoots himself right there. Nobody reacts. But then cut to somebody in the garage, the woman in the garage, suffocating herself to death, or somebody cutting their wrists. We're jumping back and forth in time. I can't tell. I can't tell what's happening.
The best part about the self-execution is the smash cut right after the sound effect so that they don't need to show any kind of bullet going through anything.
Yeah. Yep.
Because they have no budget for any of that, right? Mm. So
does he imply that the black cube he's been carrying is a USB key because it has all the secrets on it? Because he does say,
It's part of his power. You don't understand.
He says he has the secrets and he holds up the black cube that is like his
There are movies that are not interconnected in any way.
what are the four movies that you would articulate, Jeff, in this movie?
There is a movie about a man who gets superpowers. That's a movie.
Yep.
Right?
I'm with you.
There is an interpersonal family drama about drug addiction and abuse that seems pretty important, you know, like you have to stop, you're ruining your life, all of that stuff. That's a completely different, that's a like Hallmark Hall of Fame movie that's happening in here for some reason. There's a movie about a writer who is hacking all the government secrets and eventually exposes them.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Completely unique. And there is this romantic coming of age story about a man who finds his true love
at age 8.
Four movies all running in parallel. In fact, one of the things that I read last night that I thought was so brilliant is like he literally puts one of the movies on pause to go like there's a moment where he's like, I'm sorry, I'm leaving. I've got to go do this other thing. It's like, I got to go into the other movie right now and go out into the middle of the desert and look at the supernatural thing, which isn't part of our movie, but is part of this other movie that is also happening right now.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't think about it this
you
way,
just
I love
saw
it.
Sorry, what?
I just said, I hadn't thought about this, but I love this. Keep going.
By the way, he just saw the woman of his dreams abducted and had to rescue her from people who took her and were holding her inside of some horrible U-Haul, I guess. But then right after that, he's like, honey, I'm sorry I left before you woke up. Don't be worried. I'll be back. There's nothing to be worried. It's like, do you think maybe she's in danger?
Maybe she'd be worried. Well, listen, he says it 10 times, Jeff. He says it 10 times to her, so don't worry. Don't worry. I'm sorry. I have to go.
This movie is a masterpiece, you guys. And Peter, you've set the bar so high for winning the summer movie wager. Luckily, you are the only one that ever will win.
At this point, it seems likely, yeah.
Well, Peter, I'm curious. I assume you revisited it for this conversation. Yeah. And was there anything that stuck out to you this time that you might not have clocked earlier?
Yeah, and my girlfriend Kitra hates me now because I made her watch it. And she was like, during the entire thing, is like, can I go into the other room? And I was like, no.
And you're like, no.
You must
be here.
That doesn't sound like somebody who's the partner of the winner of the summer movie wager.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple things I wanted to bring up. Production wise, I'm sure you noticed this, Dave, because I know how you think and while you're watching movies. Every single product in the background was facing the other way, so you couldn't see the logos of the products to like hide the labels. But then he has like Sony laptops, and there's like a big Sony label on like all the, both of the laptops. Like, what's going on there? Did he get permission?
Sony clearly sponsored part of this movie. Like, what, Sony what, was all in on Fateful Dying.
With laptops from 20 years ago.
Yes.
Apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sony's laptops can last forever, you see.
None of them were on. There's no evidence that any of them worked at all, so don't worry about it.
The two things I do not understand about this movie, or actually three things. Okay, so there's that smoke effect ghost thing. Yeah. What is going on there?
It's a ghost.
We don't know. Okay.
It's exactly. What you think
so you're talking about how like the main character is sleeping with his wife, and then this kind of like ghost. This ghostly apparition comes into the room.
No,
right?
But it started at the very
times.
Beginning.
Yeah,
many
times.
But it's like this, like superimposed effect of like smoke going across the screen.
Yes,
I don't understand what he's trying
to
say.
It's just generalized magic.
No, yeah, it represents the power of the stone or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I read it as the kind of like the physical embodiment of his power. Yeah.
I mean, this is post Lost. We were afraid of clouds of smoke, you know. So.
Collectively, we have put a lot of thought into this movie is what I'm realizing right now. But anyway, go ahead, Peter.
Okay, I'm very disappointed in you for not putting a lot of thought into this, Dave.
I said collectively, Jeff.
Collectively.
I included myself in that accounting.
I feel like you're standing apart from it. That's what I feel. I don't think you're showing as much love for this movie as it deserves.
Prove to us that you love this movie, Dave.
Prove to us that you watched the whole thing, Dave.
Okay, number two, there's these sequences that it's him and her in a room that's covered with garbage bags. What is going on there? I don't know.
Well, we don't know if it's even her. It might be some other woman that he cast because she's constantly hiding her face. Like, somebody who was willing to do full nudity.
That's true.
I think it's that represents like a liminal space that he mentally goes to is kind of what I...
Well, that's their connection. That's their psychic connection.
It's like a psychic plane kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
After they kiss each other sloppily by the trees, yes.
It wasn't sloppy. It was very, very small kisses. Very,
very... very
yeah, very pecky. Very, I do not want
you
to be
really
here
see
with
those
you,
in
old
movies.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And number three is that golden book.
Mm. Yeah.
What is the golden book?
It's a cool book, though. It's
the first
cool
thing
book.
We see in the movie. So it's clearly you're like, this is the whole thing. So my reading was it was his story. This is the story of him. Though he does open it at some point. So that kind of goes against it. But that it being there at the beginning in the Storage Wars episode, to me felt like it had a larger importance than that.
Yeah.
What? So, Dave, I too was very, very reminded of the documentary whose name escapes me right now.
Paul T. Goldman.
Yeah, Paul T. Goldman. How is it possible that there are two Paul T. Goldmans on Earth at the same time?
Well, I think what I would submit to you is that there are dozens, if not hundreds of them.
There is a breed of man that does this.
That's disturbing. And that's the problem that we have right now in this country is that the internet has allowed those people to all connect with each other.
Yes.
Or become president. You know, absolutely. Like, the internet has empowered these folks.
Or allows people to assign their movies a summer movie wager bets. You know,
it's true. Power corrupts. Absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, I would recommend you all go look at the posters for Neil Breen's other movies because it's the same headshot that he uses for movies across different years. So the Fateful Findings headshot. It's the same as the one from, let me see here, I Am Here Now.
How many
same
movies as the one does he from, have, Devendra?
He has like three.
Five,
one that came
five
out recently.
Feature films, I believe.
Five, okay.
Yeah. The most recent is Cade, The Tortured Crossing.
That movie came out last year in 2023.
Last year.
So,
and, by the way, that's a sequel to one of his other movies, apparently. Oh.
It is a sequel to Twisted Pair, which came out in 2018. The man is still making movies to this day. How many filmmakers can say that?
It's true.
The biggest takeaway from this, honestly, is that white male ego is very fragile. Very, very fragile.
But with a lot of money, you can accomplish anything, apparently.
Very fragile.
I do want to acknowledge that some people have speculated that Neil Breen is on the spectrum to some degree, and that maybe we're watching some, that this filmmaking style is a reflection of that. I will say, regardless of that, he is clearly a raging narcissist.
Yes.
You know, like
I think we can say that.
He has put himself as, you know, obviously the object of sexual desire and also ultra powerful and also expert hacker and also savior of the world. And apparently this is a theme in many of his films. So that part I do not feel bad about ridiculing.
I mean, we are one step away from, like, he could be a cult leader. Like, these are like the stuff. This is the early Scientology stuff, you know.
Jeff is fucking ready. Jeff is ready.
I don't think he has the competence for that, but, you know, we've seen incompetence get far.
You just have to be charismatic and you have to have money to convince
people
to believe what you're saying.
But Jeff, he made five movies. Five feature films. Like,
did he make any money with those movies?
Maybe. What kind of movies, by the way? Cult movies. Five cult movies. So,
all right. Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our conversation about Fateful Findings. Peter Cerretta, now that the summer movie wager is complete, last year's wager is complete, like, I'm curious how you feel. I imagine it must be like what Hans Gruber felt at the beginning of Die Hard, you know, when Alexander looked upon his kingdom, he wept for there were no more lands to conquer. You know, and that's probably how you feel having inflicted this film on us.
Well, Peter, I'm conquering a new land right now. It's called Summer 2024, David.
Damn it.
But there's
just
no
wait
way
until Bad Boys. Just wait until Bad Boys makes $200 million, baby.
He can't keep getting away with this.
Straight to the top. Straight to the top. Peter Cerretta, any closing thoughts for us here on the Filmcast After Dark?
No, I got nothing, Dave.
I just want to say, if you listened to this conversation not having seen the film, it sounds like we're all having a stroke simultaneously.
That is the enjoyment of watching this movie with a crowd. My recommendation is watch it with your friends. Yeah. Because I think you'll have a good time.
I do think it is a little too long to be that.
Sure.
Period. Period. Sure. That's it. That's the end of that sentence. And the next thought. Yeah.
Every single shot is too long.
Everything is too long.
Like, if this was like 45 minutes, I would like strongly recommend this to everyone.
I mean, I think you should leave sketch. This should be a 3 to 4 minute, you know, idea, basically. Well,
one of the things I read last night was like somebody absolutely legitimately suggesting that this movie with a better edit could actually be something.
Sure.
And because it literally, it just so incompetently edited.
Yeah.
Every shot hangs on way too long. He's, you know, actors repeating their lines because they said their line and he hasn't said cut, or nobody stopped the camera. So you just say it again. You know, it's the weirdest thing. And it's all in the movie.
Yeah, there's no sense of time or space. Like, it's like, you're in this room, you're in this room. What day is it?
This would be a great cinematic project, actually. It's like fixing the Phantom Menace, right? Like, you tighten up the edit, but also give it a nice, like, cinema filter, because right now it looks a little too digital, a little too cheap. There are ways to, like, make this thing look better. I would love to see somebody take on that project. That'd be hilarious.
I'm just going to say I don't think you should take it on. And the reason...
Enemy of fun. Wow.
And the reason is because on his website, he does say... And also, like, in the movie itself, like, if you distribute any version of his movies in any form, he will come after you. So I just would...
And he knows how to hack any system.
He knows how to hack anything.
Good luck with your identification not being put out.
I mean, he hasn't really protected his IP really well so far. So I think you're going to be safe.
Here is the legal... At the bottom of the website for his new film, there's a legal note. It says, Neil Breen owns 100% of the legal rights to his films. He also owns the copyrights to his films. No person or distribution platform has the legal right to sell, rent, stream, distribute, or podcast
Neil
Breen film.
Oh no.
You got Walter White. You got me. Okay. Anyway, that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of the Filmcast After Dark. Jermaine Lucier, where can people find more of your work on the internet?
Find me over at IO9 and Gizmodo. They are the same website. And thank you very much for having me, Peter. Not you, though, because
especially
not you. Anyway. Peter Cerretta.
You can find me at Ordinary Adventures on YouTube. We're still doing our China series where we went to a lot of like theme parks and did some cultural stuff in China.
I'm so jealous, Peter. It's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Our latest video is we went to Universal Studios Beijing, which is incredible. They have this Jurassic World ride there that like literally makes you feel like you're in the movie. It's incredible.
Wow.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to everyone who supports this podcast on Patreon. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.